Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to today's episode of Bring Out Your Best Blog Talk Radio. My name is Kate Holmquist.
And I'm Monica Sandin.
And we're glad that you've joined us today. Surprised for a second that you had already joined us. So you've joined us in progress in our live discussion about what to do when all your dates suck. Right. And yes. Yeah. And so as is typically my custom at the beginning of a Blog Talk Radio episode, I just want to protest the topic. On some level, I feel like we always do this where it's like this topic is too close to home, or the title that we've put out for our discussion today actually doesn't really reflect the approach we have. So it's in our way of kind of consciously engaging in our own transformation here at the Right Foundation. The phrase, all my dates suck, is one that would be just suspect or called into question. Our overarching philosophy on what dating is all about, what we use dating for, it just doesn't lend itself to saying my dates suck and putting it out on the dates as if the conditions of the date or the date as the person you're dating, as if those suck. We don't stop there. We don't put the responsibility out there in that way. And I think that's going to be one of the topics we dive into a little bit in our show today, so I don't want to say too much more other than just my little protest about if you think your dates suck, then there is definitely more to the story.
Well, I'm just delighted that you're saying this because, honestly, the topic came from me.
Oh.
I have been on some rather disappointing dates recently, and it is my personal mindset. You were saying this maybe on air a moment before we started, that whatever experience we're having as dating individuals is like it's a mindset shift. And you said that you don't allow yourself to go there to the kind of like, you know, overarching all or nothing, everybody sucks mindset. And that,
right.
that is something that I am working through at a personal level that has almost nothing to do with my dating and just dealing with that reactivity in myself. So I think this is like going to actually be a really interesting topic this week.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think this is something about me that I didn't realize until a year ago, right about now. I was attending a meeting at church and leaving with my pastor and mentioned to him that I was on my way to a date. And he kind of said to me, oh, dating. You know, and it's like one of those conversations you expect to not be having with your pastor. I expect pastors to have other issues with dating, not just, oh, dating. And he went on to sort of say, don't you get so tired of it? And I was like, no, not at all. I mean, number one, I was on my way to a date with somebody that I was currently fascinated with and couldn't wait to see, so it wouldn't have entered my mind. But that moment sort of stopped me. It was like, no, thank you for reminding me that some piece of the world doesn't totally enjoy this. You know, it's just not something I'm present to on a daily basis. I feel like dating has been, you know, the biggest playground for my personal transformation, whether that means dating one person over the course of years or dating, you know, 40 people. I'd love to total it up, actually, to see how many people I've dated over the last few years.
I think
you did.
I'm going to.
Rachel did, actually.
Yeah.
A couple months ago. Yeah. Well, ask me about it next time we're on air and see if I feel like revealing the number publicly. But it's just not, I don't hold that purse about it. I think it's like great fun to get out there and meet new people, whether we wind up dating in that, you know, romancy sense or just being friends or whatever. I think it's great fun. So that's my bias.
Concur.
Yeah,
I agree. It is great fun.
And yet you find yourself going to the, oh, my date sucks.
Well, it is. I think it's this is partly a cultural thing, which we have talked about on the show before, that there are cultural, you know, mindsets and understandings about like the way things are and aren't. But I also like I'm just becoming more aware that like as I date people, when I'm bored on a date, it's because I'm like bored in my life. It's because like I'm not engaging. You know, when I'm angry at someone and withholding, it's because I'm probably doing that elsewhere in my life too. So it's kind of like a microcosm of an opportunity to be like, wow, I'm super dissatisfied, and it's because I'm not doing anything about it. You know, so to really take the opportunity to engage in a different way with whoever I'm with.
So you're telling me you don't use that as a moment to assume that your date sucks. You actually go to, there's something about my life that sucks. But
yeah.
In a productive way, not in a, God, my life sucks way, but like, wow, it's really about my life. And if there's something that sucks, let me address it and not put it on how this man is slurping his soup or not looking me in the eyes or whatever it is.
I work on that. Honestly, that's something that, like, I do have this habitual pattern of being like, well, that sucks, instead of like, wow, like, what's going on with me? And I have found myself in a situation over the last couple of months with, you know, a lot of first dates, being in it and engaging and, like, noticing where I'm not satisfied and going for my satisfaction and getting out of it and still feeling like, ugh, like, that is not somebody that I want to see again. So I actually realized this the other day, that part of the thing that I want to start orienting to is, like, my choice to engage and to talk about what I want to and to express myself is the source of enjoyment. It's not whether or not somebody responds to me pleasurably or, you know, makes a shift based off of feedback that I give. It's really, like, my choice to engage is the thing that's satisfying about my dates. And I'm working on that.
Yes. Yes, it could be a very satisfying date to engage with someone up to a level where you're both upset, combative, whatever. One of you wants to leave. That could be a huge victory.
Yeah, which I've experienced, and I have actually felt it as a victory even in the moment. So,
yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, let's hope we convert others to to that perspective in the course of our conversation today.
Yeah.
So I think we have one caller ready for us on the phone. Robin has a question about how to spot an emotionally available man while dating. Robin, tell us what's going on.
Well, I tend to get these men who are like all in from the beginning.
Hold on, just
calling me.
Robin. Oh, start again for us, will you? We couldn't hear you in the studio here.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I tend to get these men that are like all in. They call me, you know, the text in the morning and the text at night, and everything's wonderful. And it lasts for like 5 months or 3 months, and then all of a sudden they just like disappear. And I say, hey, what's going on? Did something happen? And they're like, I just don't feel right. And it's like they're emotionally unavailable, and I don't know if it's that I'm picking them wrong or I don't get it.
Okay, that is a really interesting question, Robin. I love that you're aware that you're picking them, you know, for some,
yes.
You're picking them for some reason. There's something about them that you are choosing. And so that's one level of consciousness we can kind of honor just in the question. But I find myself being curious of, is it really just them falling off the radar at some point, or is there more of something that prompts a change in tone that you've noticed?
No, I have noticed nothing. I mean, everything is fine, and just all of a sudden, okay, like one guy went on vacation, and he came back, and I didn't hear anything from him, ever. It's like, okay. Another guy was, you know, just that morning, night, noon, everything, and there was no issue, no nothing, and he just was gone.
So they seemed like they were emotionally available for kind of their frequency of contact and maybe even the content of it. And then
it
was kind of like 60 to zero.
Right.
0 to 60 and then 60 to zero again. Okay.
Right.
So
we
kind of assume that everything there is to know about a person or a relationship kind of exists in microcosm in the first few interactions. Like Monica was saying about life in general, we think that's true of dating. So, have you looked back at kind of your initial interactions with them, Robin, and looked at just what it was that drew you to them or what was a red flag for you initially? Both of those could be interesting data in trying to figure out what you look for when you're judging a man's emotional capacity or availability.
You know, I don't think that I know how to judge their emotional capacity. I think that I've made a concerted effort to go to different types of men, even men that I didn't think were my type, in an effort to find something that works, which probably is not the best scheme of things. But I don't know that I know how to gauge their emotional availability.
Well, I've got a question for you too, Robin. How emotionally available do you think you are when you're with these men?
I think I'm emotionally available, but then when you were just talking earlier, I thought, holy cow, maybe I'm not really emotionally available to myself. Therefore, what I give to other people is limited.
It's a great realization, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're in the realm of a little bit of jargon in a way. What about what you were hearing is causing you to question your emotional availability.
Well, when you were talking about that you relate the bad dates to something bad that's going on in your life, I thought, oh, maybe I'm picking these emotionally unavailable men because something about me is emotionally unavailable.
Okay.
But I don't know what that is.
Got it. So I want to make sure we're talking about the same things when we're talking about emotional unavailability. What does it mean to you, Robin?
A relationship. I look for a relationship. I've never been one to, like, date six people at one time. I don't understand how to do that. And so, you know, when I'm dating somebody, I would either date them a few times and be done with it or date them for a relationship. And to me, if you're dating somebody and talking to them daily and all throughout the day for 5 months, 6 months, whatever, that's a relationship. But then somehow when I'm with somebody, that doesn't end up being a relationship and they just, like, disappear. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. So you think it feels like you've got a close connection because you're dating
right.
and having frequent contact. And for whatever reason, like, they may also think you have a close connection, but not one that has a commitment attached where they would, if they were going to kind of bow out of it, they would probably, the responsible thing to do would be to say something. It feels more casual on their side, apparently.
Right.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I guess I would make the distinction between sort of like frequency of contact and quality of contact. If you've been a person who's historically kind of run over her feelings or if I just look for myself at like how I've used guys in relationship. I don't mean used in any negative way. I just mean what have I hired the men for in my life? And it is typically to provide emotional support in a way that's not exactly clear or clean. It's like when I get home at night and I'm alone and I'm upset by my day, I feel that impulse, like, who can I text? Who can I talk to? You know, who can just kind of be there and sort of, take me as I am in a way? Who will kind of just say, oh, they're there. I get it. Or that sucks, whatever. Who will kind of commiserate with me or make me laugh or whatever it is? I might want 20 different things. And I'm probably not exactly clear about that as I go to reach out to a guy
totally.
Get that kind of contact. And there's a way I can reach out for contact that is that facilitates emotional connection in a way that is just the usual bullshit gossip drama that people in all sorts of relationships do. Like, oh, my day sucked. Frowny face. You know, that's not
mm-hmm.
a high-quality engagement. And I know I do those things sometimes, and I hope that somebody will kind of, you know, step into it and sort of join me and it'll go to a higher level, but it starts there.
Yeah.
And so I don't assume anything about, like, frequency of contact having any meaning. I just had a text exchange with a man mid-morning where it was, like, a volley of, hello, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? And, you know, sort of a middle section where it was like, wow, I said to him, am I beginning to think you're near a train or something, Robin. I'm beginning to think you're
yeah.
a secret agent because it's really difficult to get any information out of you. And then the conversation got interesting, but then it was back to, I'm in town on these dates. I'm vacationing with family, blah, 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 blah. So, like, frequency is, like, just not it. It's all a game of, like, how much is getting revealed? How much is getting shared? Am I really, you know, like, If you look at those early text exchanges, Robin, like, do you really feel like you're getting a sense of who this person is as a man, as a person, what matters to them, what they value, or is it like, this is the person on whom I dump the shit of my day?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's interesting because the one in particular he seemed very open, but a lot of his woes had to do with his ex-wife, and I thought that was a little strange, but I thought, well, maybe this is how he gets close to people, so maybe that should have been my first red flag.
It was data, at
yeah.
least. Yeah. And for you to be you know, working for you to be satisfied in your relationships going forward, you're going to want to monitor your satisfaction moment by moment. You were probably annoyed.
Yeah, yes.
Resentful, like, hey, what am I, chopped liver? Or what are you doing living in your past? Like, all of those things that you had as little judgments flying by as he was saying those things, like, those are your best friends.
Absolutely. And then also, like, when you do, you know, make a bid for his attention, you know, and you share something vulnerable about your day or an upset, notice, like, I'm just not thinking about this for myself, like, noticing when a guy responds to me in a way that I do not find supportive at all. Like, he seems to be emotionally available. He's aware of what anger is, you know, and he can name some feelings. But when it comes down to, like, me sharing an upset, some things that bother me are, like, if he tries to, like, immediately fix it or if he tries to, like, talk it away by comparing it to something else. So noticing, like, what actually feels supportive for you in the interactions with these people, and using that as, like, your barometer, you know, for your version of emotional availability.
That's very sound advice. Thank you very much. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, so I think that the charge for you, Robin, is to kind of develop your own cheat sheet in a way, like your likes and dislikes or your standards about what emotional availability would look like for you. I actually think what you're describing is not just emotional unavailability, it's just irresponsibility, you know, just ducking out of communication entirely.
Absenteeism.
That doesn't even...
Yeah, it's common
to say
human
that's emotionally
decency.
Unavailable. What's that?
It's common human decency, you know. I always
right.
say that even with a friend, I would say, hey, this happened, and so I'm not going to talk to you anymore. So, you know, it's just boggling.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh.
And that's not to say that some friendships don't just fizzle out of, you know, infrequency of contact, but to just be silent in the face of some kind of bid, as Monica said, or some overture, and not having the guts to say, you know what, this really isn't working for me, and we would either need to, like, work on some things or decide we're not going to move forward. It's not just being emotionally available that seems to be missing. It's being adult about a situation.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the scary thing, because I'm, like, 48, and I'm thinking, okay, so I'm dating men my age or older, and we're all very near death. Shouldn't they be nicer at this point?
I'm not sure I agree with the with the premise there. Yes. but yeah, you should expect that men who want to approach you are grown-ups.
Yeah, and also, like, be aware that if this is something that he's doing with you, it's a pattern he has developed over 48 years or longer.
Yeah.
And not to say that everybody has that same pattern. But, you know, to, like, look at, I don't know, I'm just thinking, like, you know, look at your growth potential and, like, your growth moves and what's next for you and, like, what seems to be next for them and, you know, working on something in that way as well.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, Robin. Keep us posted. You hit on something at the end there that...
that
is one of the things I have to monitor around my own hopelessness around quality of people to be dated out there. Mm-hmm. I'm 35, and in the culture I grew up in, you know, rural America, that's an old biddy.
Yeah.
35. And I monitor that thought I occasionally have of all the good ones are gone. Just this morning on the bus, youngish man who I see having a wedding ring, it is like, how can he be married already? And all the good ones are probably gone, goes through my mind. So, but there is a truth in what you said of, like, the older we get, the more we are dealing with people, including ourselves, who are intractable in some ways unless they choose to take on their own growth and development.
Yeah, well, and it's not just with, you know, with people, you know, that have, like, reached midlife, you know, it's like,
right.
You know, I'm dating guys who have specifically said I'm not willing to change these particular aspects of myself, which is fine. They don't have to for me, but being able to start, like, well, that's not okay with me.
Right.
And going about interactions that way has been really helpful.
Yep.
And, like, a little bit painful, but, like, I don't know. I just find a lot of, satisfaction in being like out in the open about like what I want and what I expect, and demanding that of somebody that I'm with, like it, that does help me kind of like have a tuning fork against what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, and shame on me in a way for suggesting that it's about age. I know plenty of kids who are set in their way. You know,
yeah,
kids have this like tremendous, you know, potential to be growing in their sponges and whatever.
Yeah,
you know, you can get set in your ways or resistant to change at any age.
Yeah.
So in my mind now, I'm going back to this idea of what to do when your dates suck. So we've gone about the question of how to make dates not suck in a lot of different ways on the show,
mm-hmm.
but we've been sort of more in the moment on the date, and it occurs to me there may be ways to get on fewer dates that suck that we could actually talk about.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking about I've been on, you know, lots of dates recently and noticing you know, whether it's just one date or I see somebody for a couple weeks. Noticing by the end of it, just catching similarities. I know this may sound cliche, but how much they're like my father.
Oh.
And so I know that this is my pattern, you know, to find a guy that reminds me of my father. And, you know, I won't go into the psychology of that, but to just know that, like, you know, I will tend towards guys who appear emotionally available, who seem really happy, but who are not okay with, like, hurt, anger or sadness, which I experience, and we all do as humans. I just am a little more out with mine than a lot of people are.
The general population,
right?
For sure.
Yes, yeah.
You're deliberately working on being more out with it as an exercise.
I am working on being out with it
yourself
on the first date,
right? From the
so
first
that
meeting.
There isn't a second date or a third date or a 28th date where I feel surprised that like I'm angry and he's not okay with it,
right?
So making the sort earlier.
So I'm going even earlier. This is a live question for me, having just had a week of three dates, two of which were pretty bad. I don't have the themes sort of compiled for myself about what didn't work about those dates, but I'm sure there is a way that I wasn't getting enough information before I went, because come Wednesday, after a Monday and a Tuesday that were not satisfying at all, I was saying to myself, I'm going to have a phone call before the next date I have. Before the next time I willingly devote an hour to one particular person, I'm going to at least check him out on the phone. And there were some things that happened on the dates that couldn't have been predicted by a phone call, like how is he at eye contact?
Right.
Right. But so it was an imprecise solution applied to the actual problems I experienced on Monday and Tuesday, but I think there is, like, just a sense of entitlement I want to have for how valuable my time is.
Yes.
And kind of, like, who you need to be to get a meeting with me.
Yeah, that's great. And I've been noticing that with online dating and just some, like, buzzwords that I'll see in a guy's profile that will tell me that this is probably not somebody that I will enjoy being with in the long term. Easygoing.
Oh, yeah.
That one, I have a physical reaction to it. And I expect that somebody will engage with me at a really deep level and who's willing to, like, go to conflict if it arises.
Yep.
And, you know, and be on, I don't know, like, disturb ourselves and, like, do new things.
Yep.
And, like, you know, outrageous and adventurous is, like, you know, pretty common to see in profiles. But if they also say, if they, you know, cap it with, like, but don't worry, I'm really easygoing and I like Netflix. It's like, ah.
Ooh.
You know, so, like, it's not even going to be somebody that I try to connect with.
Right. The good date I had last week, one of the lines in his profile said, I don't do surly. And I evaluated it kind of like you're evaluating easygoing. It's like, does that mean we're opposed to conflict? And reasoned for myself that for me, I can say surly is a state. You know, it's not just it's not just that I can't ever be upset, but like to sort of stay stuck in it and present myself as a surly person, quote unquote. I can see how that would not be okay. However, on the date there was a dynamic of this person is very chill, laid back, mellow, and when I said some things that suggested I actually know how to make use of my anger and I work around people who feel free to, you know, unleash their judgments, you know, honestly, there was a definite discomfort. And I didn't remember at the time the line about surly, but I see now how that was predicted
in the person's profile. And I should have looked at that as more of a red flag. Now, I think we worked with it pretty well during the date. I called it out and said, you know, when I mentioned that thing about my where I work, I felt a cooling off in the conversation. Was that a red flag for you? And how he handled that
That's
was,
cool.
Yeah, it was a more intelligent sort than easygoing guy, right? So, you know, there's something to that. If I think about the second bad date, there was a way that everything this person said to me felt like BS. And I just couldn't sort of like grab him and be like, wait, who are you? Wait, what? And I know I felt that way from reading the profile. It, like it generated enough interest that I wanted to have a conversation. But I just, you know, as I think about these things, keep coming back to trust your gut, Kate, trust your gut. Like something, if something's rattling around down there, you know,
it's something.
It means something.
Yeah.
And I can't not listen to that. So I don't know. Monica, do you think I should initiate a mandatory call before Tinder dates?
Wow, that's such a good one. Why not? Why not just try it? I don't know. I went through a phase where I was like swiping yes to pretty much everybody just to see, and like, you know, saying yes to like whatever date I got asked on just to see. And I think I'm still kind of in that where I'm not being very selective pre-date.
Right. Yeah.
So I think like it's a phase of dating. And have a phone call.
I think
the
only thing stopping me from doing it is the fact that I know that some of those conversations will need to end awkwardly.
Oh yeah,
with me saying, you know what? I don't think we have a match here. I think we should both like save our time and move on.
Yeah,
but I think one of the most fun and fulfilling dating relationships I've had in the last 2 years was one where he picked up the phone right away to talk and establish the first date, and I knew that we'd have great conversation from that, and that is what we did. You know, there were a lot of ways that we jived that I can see the path from that first call. So I'm going to experiment with this one.
Cool, love it.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I feel like we're almost done. But just to wrap up, I mean, what I'm coming out of this with is the sense that it's not a bad date. It's something, you know, there's something going on with me that I'm not being aware of, like either in my life or in this particular moment.
Right.
And to like blame it on the date and on the guy would, you know, leave me never having dates,
right.
Thinking that I'm never going to get a good one.
Yeah, so let's take this to the extreme example that sometimes gets used around here. We use Viktor Frankl and his approach to life in concentration camps as evidence of the power of mindset. It's like there's a way to learn and grow and be positively transformed by almost any experience. And I don't say that to discount or overlook the fact that obviously out of that same experience, people died and were scarred in many ways, but we use the extreme example to say, like, you can learn and grow and develop from any situation. So at that point, a bad date is still good data, and you can still learn. You can become better from a bad date.
Yes, and the only time it's bad is when I choose not to take any of that and apply it to my life.
Right, if I stop at bitching and moaning and don't actually use it to refine my criteria, refine my vision, refine my strategy, then, it was a bad date. It was really a wasted hour if you don't take it there.
Yeah.
But shy of that, apart from that, there really is no bad date.
Agreed.
They're painful ones.
Painful, yeah.
But not bad.
Gross ones, but not
gross,
bad.
Gross, but not unusable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Well, thanks, Monica.
Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Robin.
Thanks, Robin.
In. And if you liked what you heard here about the Right Foundation's perspective on how we learn, grow, transform, and move ourselves along, or just how to relate to others, you may be interested in checking out one of our live events. We have kind of a bite-sized one coming up on September 3rd in the evening here at the Right Hub. It's actually our personality styles evening. We call it the Care Profile. It will feel familiar if you've looked at the DISC inventory or any other kind of personality assessment system, but it's our own unique spin on it, and Dr. Bob Wright is leading it. He actually developed this particular model for hairstylists in the late 80s, which we all know have a heavy relationship job to do, and he has trained hundreds of thousands of people internationally at this point in this particular model of learning to understand your own style and match or adapt your style to meet other styles. So it's a fascinating evening.
It isn't just a technical skill of personality styles, but really a deep understanding of how people work that is not to be missed if you're able to attend. You can register at rightleaderevent.com, and there is an online option as well. So join us here at the Hub or live from anywhere in the world online. I almost said the universe, but we do not have that
don't broadcast
interplanetary
the
broadcast system yet in the realm of possibility.
And it's on September 3rd,
September 3rd
in the evening.
Yes. So join us for that if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Or every Wednesday and Thursday here is an episode of Blog Talk Radio, Bring Out Your Best. Two Wednesdays from now, we'll be back with another topic on singlehood and dating. So hope you join us then. Thanks so much.
Thanks.